You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
A couple things, preliminary things. First of all, my name is Don Arms. Not that that's important, but I have for the last 20 years, 25 years before Jay died, spent quite a bit of time with Jay. It is now my task to bring his books back into print, which we are doing, and I'll talk more about those a little later. Secondly, I need you to meet my beautiful wife. Stand up, please. Stand up. She's right here. And I know what you're all thinking. You're all thinking, Arms must be rich. How else does a lump like Arms end up with a trophy wife? Unless he's rich. But I'm rich, but not in that way. But anyway, that's my wife. Next, I want to introduce to you a young lady who you need. Heather, stand up. This is Heather Slattery. Heather is Jay Adams' daughter. So, see, did you hear? Everybody went, oh. She lives there near her mother.
Next door.
They're at what I call the Adams compound out there. So we are delighted to have you here. And she's hopefully not going to be here the whole time because her husband is also doing a workshop at the same time. So she has to leave and support him. I'm just afraid she'll speak up and say, wait a minute, wait, that's not exactly right. Wait a minute. So anyway, you have in your thing notes, do you not? In your, yeah, can you read it on an iPhone? Is it enough to, well, anyway, that's the outline I'm following. But you'll notice in the notes, I have also appended about three or four articles that Jay wrote. They said they didn't matter. I didn't have to waste paper to print it out. And they said it didn't matter how much I put in it. So I put several articles of Jay's there. One, Counseling and the Sovereignty of God, which is something every counselor needs to read. I also have an article entitled The Big Umbrella, which he wrote very early on. I just wanted you to get a taste of the kind of things that Jay wrote early on in his ministry. I also have a book review there, and that's kind of self-explanatory. And I also have a fairly extensive bibliography. Jay wrote about 100 books over the time of his life. And I have, I think, most of them recorded there. At least I have the ones recorded there that are available or will be available. There are some obscure things that I don't think you'll ever see the light of day again, but we're trying to get everything possible back into print. So there is a bibliography there. If you want to go online and search for used copies of that stuff, blessings on you. But they have found, you'll find that it's very expensive. Now, let me do a little research here. Of how many of you have never heard Jay Adams speak in person? All right. Well, that's revealing. Okay. And I'm glad that you're here. I'm not glad that you didn't get to hear him, but I'm glad that you're here. I thank you for that. Let me ask one more diagnostic question. I'll be done. How many of you have read Competent to Counsel? Ah, excellent. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Our plan of attack today is we're going to just do an overview of his life, kind of a timeline kind of a thing. And as we go through that, I will be hitting some topics that were especially prevalent that he was dealing with at that time in his life. But this is kind of a timeline here that'll kind of help us to guide our thoughts as we make our way through this. So, of course, if we're doing a timeline of someone's life, we begin with birth, childhood, so on. Jay was born on January 30, 1929. His dad was a policeman. His mom was a secretary in various places. He had just a regular old normal childhood, although you need to know his mom and dad were not believers, at least at that time in his life. Jay has no recollection of going to any church early on, except for he has one recollection of a lady in the neighborhood who would regularly take round up a group of boys and take them to their liberal Methodist church. And he remembered that because in one Sunday school class, the teacher said, held up a Bible and said, we're not going to study this because it's so out of date. And he threw it against the wall. It fell to the floor where it remained through the entire session. I mean, Jay was 8 to 10 years old, but he remembers that vividly, which would make a impression on a young man. He was about 14 years old. He had a group of guys that he ran around with, and a couple of the guys went to a solid Presbyterian church in the area. And one of these high school kids, for some reason, was carrying around a copy of a book, and all of a sudden the name escaped me, but it was on the Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox. Liberal approach to the Sermon on the Mount. And this guy was a 15-year-old kid. He was upset about the book. He was telling everybody in the neighborhood, this guy that I'm reading doesn't believe the Bible. He doesn't believe this. And Jay was what is this guy so worked up about? What's the big deal that he's concerned whether this guy believes the Bible or not? And so he said to himself, self, maybe I ought to check this out. And so he knew there was a copy of a Gideon New Testament up in the top closet that his dad had gotten as a World War I soldier. And he pulled that book down, that little pocket New Testament, and he started reading. King James Version, and he started reading. And by the time he got through the Gospel of John, he came to believe that what he was reading was true. There was no Aldersgate experience or anything like that, but he came to believe what he was reading was true. And he became a believer, and he began to hunger for more, and he devoured the rest of the New Testament. He asked his friends, where do you go to church? Where can I learn more? And they took him happily, in the providence of God, to a solid Presbyterian church where there was a pastor by the name of Bob Smoot. And this pastor was an exegete, and he went through the scriptures verse by verse and explained the Bible, and Jay was enthralled. He just ate it up. As he was going to high school, you need to understand, Jay was one of these annoying high school kids that was smarter than everybody else in the class. If your teacher graded on the curve, you especially hated him because he wrecked the curve every time. And they pushed him ahead a year and a half through the grades because he wasn't being challenged. So he graduated from high school when he was 15 years old, and he wanted to know the Bible better. So he went and asked his pastor, what do I do? Where do I go to college? And his pastor said, you don't need to go to college. You need to go to seminary. Seminary? Yes, seminary. Don't you have to have an undergraduate degree? Yeah, normally, but wait a minute. And so Bob Smoot called the powers that be at Reformed Episcopal Seminary, where he had gone to school, where it sends everybody, and says, I've got a young man here who is hungry and is who will do well in seminary, even though he doesn't have an undergraduate degree. And so they accepted him. Youngest student they ever accepted into the seminary. Only student they've ever accepted without an undergraduate degree. And he immersed himself in seminary. And he was bewildered because he had a lot of catching up to do. He told me that he knew about Noah and Jonah, that they had something to do with water, but he had no idea which was which. So he had to spend extra time studying to catch up, and he did. He studied diligently. And during those 3 years, he became thrilled with the Greek language. I don't get it either, But he just had an acumen for the Greek language, and he just loved studying the Greek New Testament. And he became quite skilled at it. And by the time he'd spent 3 years, he's 16, 17, 18, even to 19 years old. He's 19 years old when he graduates from seminary with a theological degree. Well, back up. They wouldn't give him a degree yet because he didn't have an undergraduate degree. You have an undergraduate degree before you get a graduate degree. So he'd done all the classwork. He'd been through everything, but he had to have an undergraduate degree. Now, Reformed Episcopal Seminary was in Philadelphia, and Jay lived in Baltimore. He grew up in Baltimore. So on weekends, he would hitchhike back and forth. It was a different day, folks. He would hitchhike back and forth between seminary and home, spend a weekend at home because he loved going to church where he first learned the word, and got involved with Youth for Christ, did some street evangelism. You remember they used to drive a pickup up to the park. You know, this was before cell phones. This was before much of TV. You know, so when you'd go to the park with a pickup truck and have a bunch of stuff on the back, have a couple guys playing some musical instruments, you could draw a crowd. And so they would draw a crowd, and Jay or some of his friends would stand up and preach there in the park. And that's where he first learned to preach, just in the open air preaching. After he was done with seminary, he moved back to Baltimore, where he attended Johns Hopkins University. And when he went to apply for admissions, he had an admissions interview, and the guy leaned back in the chair. He said, "Now wait a minute, you're headed for the ministry, aren't you?" "Yeah." "You know, we're a secular university. You know, most of those schools on the East Coast, Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth, they were founded as religious institutions. Johns Hopkins was founded precisely not to be a religious institution." He said, "Now, you know, you're going to be challenged. Your faith's going to be challenged." And Jay just looked at him. He says, "Well, I've heard, I've been studying the Bible for 3 years, and I know I'm up against it, and I want to study where I know I'm going to be challenged. So I want to hear the best of what the world has to throw against me." And the admissions counselor liked that answer, and so they admitted him. He was about the age by then, as most people are when they start in their undergraduate experience. And so he spent 4 years at Johns Hopkins. And at Johns Hopkins, in the providence of God, they had a Greek professor there. He majored in classic languages. They had a Greek professor there who was one of the foremost scholars in Koine Greek. But he had never read the New Testament in Koine Greek, this Greek Koine Greek expert. And so he went to class, and there weren't very many people interested in studying Koine Greek, so Jay was the only student in the class. So they sat down in the professor's office and said, "Well, you're headed for the ministry, right? Well, let's go through the New Testament." And Jay said, the whole New Testament?" He said, "Sure, why not?" "Well, that's a lot of materials." The guy said, okay, how about this fellow Paul? Let's go through what Paul had to write." So they started in at Romans. And they start going through Romans, and this guy who had never read the New Testament before, but he knows Koine Greek front and back, he knows all the secular writers in Koine Greek, by the time he was done with chapter one, he was dumbfounded. And he was pointing at words and said, this is very coarse language that this guy is using. And he'd point to this. If you know about Romans 1, toward the end of Romans 1, Paul is very pointed, very descriptive. Jay had a chance to talk to this Greek professor about the Lord. Jay graduated from Johns Hopkins University, and on the same day that he graduated from Johns Hopkins University, he was also awarded a seminary degree on the same day, because now he had his undergraduate degree. Married in 1951, he met Betty Jane while he was a student at Johns Hopkins, met her at a Youth for Christ activity. Through that time, Jay continued the street evangelism thing and so on. Ultimately, God gave Jay and Betty Jane 4 children. You met one. One is with the Lord, Clay, and not Kata. See, I knew she needed to be here. Clay lives down in Southern California. Todd is with the Lord, and Holly lives close to on the same compound there with her husband. So, Jay graduated from college and seminary then, and he took a church in 84, Pennsylvania. That's the name of the town, 84. There's all sorts of theories as to how it got its name. You've heard of 84 Lumber Company. That's where it was started. And it was started about the same time Jay was there. It was a little Quonset hut just down the road from where the church was. He was there for a while, and he quickly found out that probably nobody in his church was a believer. It was an old mainline Presbyterian church, and so he rolled up his sleeves and started doing evangelism, and people got saved. And here he faced his first controversy. He was part of a liberal denomination that wanted to merge with a more liberal denomination, and Jay spoke out against it, and the powers that be in his denomination wanted to have a debate with someone from the other denomination as to why this was a good move or not. And so they couldn't find anyone else. And Jay raised his hand and said, I'll do it, not knowing any better. And he rolled up his sleeves. He went to a seminary back up in Philadelphia, did his research, found some writings of the guy that he was going to be debating, which demonstrated how liberal this guy really was. And so when they got to the debate, Jay was loaded, and the guy was saying, "Oh, we're not liberal. We believe the same things as you guys do. So this merger is a good thing." And so Jay would stand up and say, "Well, one of your people in your denomination says this is, and that's not conservative. That's liberal. That's denying the scriptures. And a guy in your denomination says this," and he quoted the guy again. And the guy's turning red over there because he knows good and well that he's quoting him. It made him mad. He went back to the school that he was associated with, where Jay was also taking some classes. He was taking some classes at Pittsburgh Xenia Seminary at the time. And the guy threw a wrench into Jay's degree program there, and they kept moving the goalposts on him. He would get something done, and they say, okay, that's fine, but now we need you to do this, and now we need you to do that. And Jay concluded liberals play dirty pools, how he used to describe it. Liberals just play dirty pool. But one good thing about his experience taking some classes at Xenia was that he got to study under John Gerstner. I don't know if you know that name or not, but he appreciated being able to do that. From there, he went to the church that he was pastoring split, because some of them wanted to stay in the liberal denomination. Jay was not going to be a part of this liberal denomination. And so the church split, and Jay took over the pastor of the church that split away. He stayed there for a couple years and went to Haddonfield, New Jersey, and took over another church split. This one was a split off of Carl McIntyre's church. Does the name Carl McIntyre mean anything to you? You should Google. Yes, you should Google Carl McIntyre, or ask Kevin. Kevin will tell you. Carl McIntyre is a very colorful individual, was a kind of a rabble rouser, conservative guy, but a rabble rouser. And he bought a boat and started a radio broadcast from the boat off just far enough offshore so that the FCC didn't have jurisdiction over him, and he would broadcast. His colorful guy. But he took over that church that split off from him, and continued his studies at Temple University, where he got to study under Andrew Blackwood. If that name means anything, you Google it. After a while, his denomination invited him to take over the job of home missions director, which made him in charge of church planting all over North America. So he used to travel all over North America in a VW Bug, if you know what those are, were little air-cooled engines. Actually, they weren't cool at all, but they said they were air-cooled. And he'd drive around, and I mean, he had no money, and so he would just take a sleeping bag, and he'd come night, he'd just roll out his sleeping bag by the side of the road and sleep and get back up and be on his way again to where he had to have his next meetings. And while he was doing that, it became well known in his circles that he had a little different view of eschatology than most people in his denomination, because the denomination was largely premillennial. This was the old, Bible Presbyterian. Is that right? Kevin's my expert here. And everywhere he went, people would ask him, explain to me your view of eschatology. And so they would stay up into the night talking with various pastors. And Jay finally concluded, this is not good for me to be talking to pastors about my view when it's really not what the seminary by large, or the denomination by large holds to. So he wrote a book, his first book that he ever published, entitled Realize the Millennialism. He didn't like the term amillennial, because even amillennialists believe in a millennium. So he called it Realized Millennialism. And he wrote this book. He dedicated it to his three children at the time, and he named them. In subsequent editions, he dedicated it to all four of his children. Rather than solve the problem that he was having, it just generated more problems. And Jay's published this book. And so Jay just, you know, he was in charge of raising money to plant churches in his denomination, so this isn't going to work. So he resigned his position, focused on his studies at the University of Missouri, and worked on his PhD. And I just looked at the clock. I need to pick up the pace here. After he was done with his classwork at the University of Missouri, he went and took a church in Westfield, New Jersey, and began teaching at Westminster Seminary part-time. And while he was there, he was assigned to teach a class entitled Poimenics, from the Greek word poimeo, which means to shepherd. That's what they used to call the course we now call pastoral theology. It's the course where they teach pastors how to be a pastor. Now, in Baptist churches, they would teach Baptist pastors how to do a baptism. It's simple in a Presbyterian church; you don't take so much time. But there was a section in that course on counseling. Just a section. You're supposed to spend a couple weeks talking about counseling. Jay knew nothing about counseling. He'd had some experiences trying to counsel earlier in his ministry and was not satisfied with what he'd done. And he protested when they gave him the course, and they said, no, the guy that taught it is gone, and you're the youngest guy here, and you have no seniority, so you just got to take this. So he did, and because he didn't know anything about counseling, he just took the guy's notes that had taught the class last year and taught those notes. And by the time he was done, his soul was in deep turmoil. He was grieved. He was ashamed of himself, because as he went through that curriculum, he said, there was nothing about what I just taught these students that was biblical whatsoever. And he said, I am not going to do this again. He knew he was going to have to teach his course the next year. And so he went to work, and he started reading everything he could. How do I make secular counseling ideas integrate? He didn't use the word. How do I fit them with the scriptures? And he tried valiantly to understand how he could take what the world was saying about psychology and make it work with the scriptures. And after a year or two of trying to do that, he concluded it just can't be done. And while he was in the midst of this turmoil, he communicated with a couple people. There were a couple of books that especially stood out for him. One was The Myth of Mental Illness by Thomas Zaz. It's still in print. I would urge you to get a copy of that. They just put out a 50th anniversary edition of that. And also a book by O. Hobart Mauer entitled Crisis in Psychology and Religion, in which Mauer made a very famous statement. He said, he asked a question, has evangelical Christianity sold its soul for a mess of psychological pottage? Because he was convinced that they had. O. Hobart Mauer was a past president of the American Psychological Association, but he was an iconoclast. He threw stones at the psychological structures of the day. And Jay had communicated with him, and he heard that Mauer was speaking at a school just down the street from Westminster. So he walked down there and heard Mauer lecture and engaged him in conversation after the lecture. And on the spot, Mauer invited him to spend a summer with him. Funded by the Lilly Fellowship, and Jay accepted. So in 1965, Jay spent a summer traveling with O. Hobart Mauer to three different psychological institutions in the state of Illinois, and he watched Mauer work. Now, Jay never had access to psychological institutions before, and so he went in there and he watched Mauer sit counselees down and point at them and hold them responsible for their actions. Well, Jay had never heard any of this from the psychological literature he'd been reading, and this was eye-opening for him. Now, Mauer was not a believer. He was an agnostic. Jay spent many, many hours trying to evangelize O. Hobart Mauer and writing letters to him and so on. But that was eye-opening for him. Now, I have read in various places people write and say that Jay was a disciple of O. Hobart Mauer. Don't believe it. It is not true. Jay was not a student of O. Hobart Mauer. Jay spent a summer observing him. And that's the extent of what he learned from O. Hobart Mauer. Now, Jay used to like to say, Mauer threw a lot of stones at the psychological structure of the day, and he broke a lot of glass. But Mauer didn't have anything to put back in the windows to keep the bugs out. His toolbox was devoid of anything. Mauer was good at tearing things down, but he had nothing to build things up with. So Jay went back to work. What Mauer did was help Jay clear the site. After spending that time with Mauer, Jay gave up on trying to make anything that the world had to write on the issue of psychology integrate with the scriptures, which was freeing for him. In order to build a structure, you've got to level everything first and clear a foundation, and that's what Mauer helped Jay do. And so Jay went back and started building using biblical materials, and he studied the scriptures, and he was counseling with people. And as he counseled with people, they would encounter something new, and so he would go back to the scripture. What does the scriptures have to say about this thing that this lady presented to me or this couple is dealing with? What do the scriptures have to say about this? And piece by piece, he started to build a system of biblical counseling. In 1968, he established an organization, a foundation, which served as kind of a vehicle through which he could do counseling. The Christian Counseling and Educational Foundation, now known as CCEF. In 1966, as he was doing all this, he became a full-time professor at Westminster. And his counseling load picked up steadily along with his teaching load. As you know, Jay was a homiletics professor, not a counseling professor. He hooked up with a man by the name of John Bettler, a young man who he helped And John Bettler counseled with him. They had they would counsel people all day long, and then they would have people sitting in with them, observing them counsel. And then in the evening, they would have what they called a supper seminar. They'd send someone down the street to McDonald's to grab a bunch of hamburgers, and they'd sit around the table, and they would talk about the cases that they were involved in when counseling. And from that, Jay would go back and study the scriptures, and he would learn, and these students would learn. Now, those people who were involved in those supper seminars, I think today the only one left is Howard Eyrich. And Wayne Mack in South Africa was part of that. But otherwise, most of those people are gone. But it was a wonderful learning experience for him. In 1968, he first coined the word nouthetic as he was building his system. First used it in a chapel message at Westminster Seminary. And as he was putting together his system, he needed to have a book, notes for his people, his students. So he collated his notes, and he gave the notes to a friend of his who had a printing press and said, can you put a cover on this and make, because he was doing it on a ditto machine. And you know, you smear, you're familiar with those. So the guy took, he said, yeah, I'd be glad to. And the guy looked at it and he said, man, this is good stuff. And he gave it to somebody at PNR Publishing. And PNR went to him and said, hey, can we publish this? And Jay thought, well, I never really thought about that, but yeah, we'll think about it. And so Jay spent some time working it into a book. And before he published it, the publisher wanted him to have some other people weigh in on it, some people who were experts in the field. And so they gathered together about six guys who are well-known as counselors who were teaching in various seminaries around the country. Vernon Grounds was one of them. The names escape me of these other people, but they're well-known at the time, people who were doing this. And they had what we call the airport meeting. They met at the airport in Philadelphia, and they sat around. They'd all been given a copy of the manuscript ahead of time. They'd read it and marked it up, and they got together to discuss it. And they sat around this table, and they looked at Jay, and they said, well, you know, we like a lot about what you said here, yet we agree with much of what you say here. Yes, there is a need for this. Yes, psychology has taken over far too much of what the church's responsibilities are. But you can't say this like this. This is, you're going to alienate people. You can't attack all these other structures like this. You need to be more positive, you know. And so Jay went away from that meeting, and he thought to himself, self, all of these guys are teaching in seminaries. They all have a platform from which they can speak to the church. And they all say they agree with the substance of what I'm saying. So what are they doing about it? They're not doing anything to make any changes, even though they agree with me. But yet they say I ought to tone down what I'm doing. And so Jay took his manuscript and he made it even more blunt than it was. He sharpened it up even more. And he published Competent to Counsel in 1970. And it hit the fan. It really did. It turned the world, it turned the counseling world, it turned the Christian psychology world upside down. In some places, he was savaged. You should read some of the book reviews of it when it first came out. He was just savaged. But amongst conservative evangelical pastors, they rose up and called him blessed. They said, this is what we've been waiting for. This is the help we've been needing. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. And so once that took off, the book sold. So it sold briskly. And he began a stage in his life that was just breathless. He's teaching full-time, traveling and lecturing, published a bunch of books in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Pulpit speech, the big umbrella, Christian counselor's manual. Have you seen the Christian counselor's manual? That's not something you put together overnight. Christian living in the home, shepherding God's flock, going back to the pastoral ministry. All these other books were written during that time, as well as booklets and pamphlets. Christ and Your Problems, you're all familiar with that. He wrote that at that time. And he was in demand as a speaker. Dallas invited him in to hold their big deal lecture that they have every year, published his lectures in BibSac. Sadly, it didn't take, but they didn't listen to him, but he had a chance to say something. And finally, by 1976, his body just gave out. He said, I recalled climbing just a half a flight of stairs up to my office, and by the time I got to the top, I couldn't breathe. So he went to the doctor, and his doctor said, you've got to stop. You can't keep doing this. And so he took it to heart. He resigned from his professorship at Westminster, which was unheard of. Nobody ever goes to Westminster and then resigns. Westminster's the pinnacle of somebody's career, yet he resigned. He turned CCEF over to John Bettler. Jay was only at CCEF for 8 years. That's the extent of his influence at CCEF. So he moved to Georgia, the Macon area, a place that he called the Mill House. He bought an old rundown mill by a creek and went to work converting that thing. By work, I mean, for him, it was relaxing. He enjoyed doing it. And he converted. I wish Heather could turn around and tell you stories about life at the Mill House. It was a very interesting place. And that was a blessing for him because he was able to devote himself to writing and traveling around speaking and without the responsibility of any classwork or anything. So he translated the entire Greek New Testament during those years because he said, I just needed to be confronted with every single word of the New Testament if I was going to keep doing this. So he translated the entire New Testament. The result was what we have today is the Christian Counselor's New Testament. That's Jay's own translation, along with some counseling notes and helps and so on, which you can obtain from the Institute for Nuthetic Studies. If you go to our website, you can be able to get a copy. Here's a whole list of books that he published during that time. Do not listen. Do not heed, anyway, those people who will tell you, yeah, Jay, we love Jay Adams, but he only dealt with people's sin. He wasn't concerned about people's suffering. Have you heard that canard before? Don't believe it. From the very beginning, Jay addressed the subject of people's suffering. Even in Competent to Counsel, he spent time talking about the man born blind in John chapter 9, Job. He spent time talking about those things in Competent Counsel from the very beginning. But he also wrote, as you go on, we have some of them listed here, how to handle trouble, how to deal with trouble that comes to you from outside, other people who afflict you, how to overcome evil. These aren't things of their own making, but when people do evil things to you, how do you deal with it? And happily, I can tell you, we just now republished a commentary Jay wrote during those years on 1 Peter. Jay didn't believe in writing a pamphlet or a book about how to deal with all the things that come on us. He believed in showing us what the scriptures had to say about those things. And so he wrote a book, a commentary on 1 Peter. It's a homiletic commentary showing pastors, how do you preach this book to help your people handle suffering? If you're going to talk to people, counselees about suffering, where are you going to go? You're going to go to 1 Peter. So Jay wrote a commentary to help people teach First Peter. You can get that on our website, by the way. Did I mention that? You can order it. You have to go through this organization that starts with an A and ends with Zahn. But I urge you to get a copy of Trust and Obey is the name of the book, Trust and Obey. So that was one of the most productive periods of his life as far as his writing was concerned. And it was a delightful time for him because he could focus on what he wanted to focus on. He had this beautiful study set up. I mean, it was a very rustic place that he had, but it overlooked a brook, and he had this big picture window behind his desk, and he could look out and see the babbling brook going by, and it was just a serene setting for him to do his studying and writing. After a while, 1982, he was contacted by Westminster Seminary again, and he was asked, would you please go to California for us because there are people there wanting to start a seminary, and we're thinking about opening a branch of our seminary in California. Would you go out there and do three things for us? Number one, would you see if there's interest amongst the pastors in the area for a new seminary? Number two, would you see if you can find a suitable site, a location for this place? And number three, would you be the president of it? Jay said, yes, I would be glad to go and talk to pastors out there and evaluate the possibility. And number two, yes, I'd be glad to scout out a place. And he did that. And he came back. He even came back with funds in his pocket to give to the seminary toward it. But he said, number three, no, I will not be the president. Within 6 months, I would hate being the president, and you would hate having me be the president. So Jay hated academia. I mean, all the trappings of academia, he endured. But after they started the seminary, and after a few years, the school came to him and said, okay, would you come out and start a program, a D-Min program in homiletics for us? And they structured it in such a way that Jay could teach in modules and still have the freedom to travel and do his writing and so on. And that appealed to Jay because Jay loved homiletics. He was burdened about the quality of preaching in Presbyterian circles. So he wanted to teach preachers. And so he did. He went out there. He promised them he would spend He promised him 5 years, and he ended up staying eight. But he established a D-Min program in homiletics. But if you studied homiletics with him in his D-Min program, you did not write a dissertation. You wrote a book. And you had to get that book published. And this book had to be a book that would be of genuine help to pastors. He said, I'm not going to have students write some heavy tome that's going to end up just sitting on some library shelf somewhere and melt into dusty obscurity. We're going to publish books. And so not everybody ended up getting their book published and so on, but several very good books came out of that. Sam Cirio published a good book on how to preach to abused people. Tim Turner published a book on preaching to program people far before people had iPhones and so on everywhere they went. There's another book published called Preaching with Freshness in which the student just had laid out a fictional story, and he taught how to do preaching through this fictional story that he wrote. A very good book. So he was there, and after he'd been there, 8 years, something like that, 7, 8 years, a friend of his in South Carolina came to him and said, would you consider coming back and planting a church? This is the ARP denomination now, and they had a piece of land that they had been given or they had obtained that was surrounded by just vacant land that was all scheduled to become housing developments all around it. And Jay was jazzed about that. He loved the church. He missed being a pastor. So he went back there, and with his son-in-law and daughter, Bill Slattery became his associate. and they planted the Harrison Bridge Road Presbyterian Church in Simpsonville, South Carolina. And from there, they planted the Redeemer Presbyterian Church, which Bill Slattery went on to pastor. And he had 7 great years there, pastoring that church, building it up. During that time, he established Timeless Texts. A friend of his from University of Missouri days had become a successful businessman, and Jay had become tired of 25-year-old editors at publishing companies telling him what he could and couldn't say in his books. So they decided to start their own publishing company, and so they did, and they published a number of books. And as Jay got older, and as his friend got older, they had to make some decisions about what to do. They weren't able to continue what they'd been doing. His friend died, ultimately Jay assigned all of his copyrights over to us, the Institute for Nuthetic Studies at Mid-America Theological Seminary, and he entrusted the legacy of his books to us to get them into print. So that's what we've been doing. He retired from his church in 1997, became a retired country gentleman in rural South Carolina, Ennery, South Carolina. Have y'all been to Ennery? Ennery, South Carolina? It's Ennery the 7th is right next door to Ennery the 8th. Sorry. But he started with myself and Bill Slattery. I keep pointing there because that's where Heather's at. We started the Redeemer Biblical Counseling Training Institute, and Jay was teaching along with Bill and I. And as soon as word got out that Jay was teaching counseling again, we were inundated with letters and emails and requests. Are you recording his lectures? Can we get his lectures? Jay and I sat down and we decided, you know, rather than just sending lectures out here and there willy-nilly, let's structure a curriculum that people can take by extension. This was before the internet. This was before you could do things like that easily. And so we put together this structured curriculum. We recorded the lectures on VHS tape. You remember VHS tapes? We would send out big boxes of VHS tapes to students, and they would go through the lectures, and they would send the tapes back to us, and that's how we got started. And then, oh, happy day, they invented something called a DVD, and we were able to put these lectures on DVDs, and we could put them in a little packet about that big rather than these big monster, and we'd mail them back and forth to our students. And then, oh, happy day, we found out you could do the whole thing online without sending anything back and forth to people. So that's what we ended up doing eventually is an online curriculum, which we still do today. You can go to our website and you can learn all about how to study. You can still study biblical counseling under Jay Adams, his own self. Just go to our website. Did I mention our website? Nuthetic.org. Shame on me, I don't have it written down here. Nuthetic.org. Write it down. Promise me you'll go home and look at it at least when you get home and just go through all. We have a lot of stuff. You might be in during those days. Jay began blog. Yes, sir.
Prior to that, he became the professor of biblical counseling over at Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary.
Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary, just to get in a shout out to.
Well, our first professor in counseling.
Yeah, there you go. During those days, Jay began to blog. We have hundreds and hundreds of things. Jay would send me these. Sometimes he would send me 3 or 4 of them a day, and we would post these blogs on our website. Some of these blogs were very deep and insightful. Some of them were about the weather that day. But we are in the process of time to time we repost some of these blogs that he did. Also, I should mention that Jay was a podcaster before there were podcasts. Back in the 80s, into the 90s, There was a network of Christian radio stations that asked Jay to produce a 10-minute segment on whatever subject Jay wanted to do. And so Jay recorded about 200 of these sessions. He got an old refrigerator box. He put eggshell crates around it. He stuck his head inside of it and recorded himself teaching these 10-minute radio spots, which today I call podcasts. And today you can listen to Jay Adams' podcasts. Where can you listen to Jay Adams' podcasts? On our website at newthetic.org. So Jay was way ahead of his time, way ahead. But as time went on, Jay's health started to decline. Jay suffered tremendously in his last 10 years of his life. He had something called trigeminal neuralgia. If that's familiar to you, there are three nerves in your face called the trigeminal nerves. They would become inflamed, and he tried everything. Doctors tried everything, and they were just debilitating. The pain was just debilitating. And when you've got that kind of pain, you can't sleep. And if you can't sleep, you really can't think very clearly. And so, I mean, Jay continued to try to write some things, but after a while, he just concluded, I just can't put the thoughts together like I used to be able to. So he had to kind of give up on, although I will tell you, he did write some things, and I do have some things in my files that I think eventually are going to see the light of day that I think are very valuable, but Jay would spend his time there. He lost the ability to walk. He was confined to a wheelchair most of the last 10 years of his life. Spent most of his time there in his study, just enjoying reading the scriptures. But his mind was still sharp in so many ways. I remember going out there, and while we were having a discussion about something or other, the mail came. And in the mail was a manuscript from some guy who had written a dissertation or something about Thomas Watson, Puritan. Jay did not like the Puritans necessarily. I mean, he didn't get why people were so enamored with him. But anyway, he started reading this. He did like Thomas Watson, by the way, which is why he picked it up. So I'm sitting there having a discussion with Jay about some abstruse theological thing that he was trying to convince me of, and I was trying to convince him of, and while we were having the discussion, he's flipping through this PhD dissertation, and he would chuckle to himself and never missed a beat while he's talking to me. I have his full attention. He's fully engaged in my conversation with him, but he's also absorbing this thing that's on his lap with him at the same time. That's Jay Adams. I stopped in one time, unannounced one time, and came in, and Betty ushered me back to his study, and he was reading. I said, Jay, what are you reading? And he picked it up and he showed me. He's 86, 87 years old at the time. He was reading the Septuagint in the original Greek, recreationally. Having a good time reading the Septuagint, the original Greek. So that's an overview of his life. I really wanted to spend some time doing Q&A, if you have any Q&A. I buzzed over some things I wished I didn't have to buzz over, but questions. Before I do that, if I accomplish one thing with this seminar, what I'd like to do is light a fire under you to read Jay Adams. 100 years from now, people are going to be reading Jay Adams in the same way that today you and I read Spurgeon, we read Calvin, we read Machen, we read C.S. Lewis. 100 years from now, people are going to be reading Jay Adams in the same way we do that with these other authors. So get his books now while they're available. Now, they'll still be available then, now that we got them in print. You can get them at newthetic.org.
You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.